Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading part 4 of Miracles Cast in Blood by Jarrett. Huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. If you'd like to support the channel and the podcast, go on over to Patreon. Let's get started. Tom stood outside the Monroe County Courthouse, the buzz of news crews, reporters, and gawking bystanders filling the parking lot. He still couldn't believe it. Jessica Neal, arrested for drug possession. The news had bombarded him. Shocking. Unbelievable. She wasn't just any prosecutor. She was the prosecutor. The one who had gone toe-to-toe with Dennis Randall. The one who had shown more tenacity and grit than anyone else in this town. And now she was being paraded as a criminal? The courthouse doors flew open, a hush falling over the crowd. Cameras flashed. Reporters surged forward. Microphones thrust toward the approaching figure. A sea of hands, all wanting their small sliver of the action. Jessica stepped into the sunlight, flanked by two deputies in uniform. Her wrists were cuffed behind her back, her facial expression unreadable. She wore her usual suit, though it was rumpled now. The normally pristine image of authority and dignity tarnished. Despite this, she held her head high, her hazel eyes scanning the crowd with a calm, detached air, as if daring them to question her. Tom felt a pang of something. Pity? Anger? No, something deeper. Disbelief. This wasn't right. She wasn't a criminal. Wasn't the kind of person who would shove cocaine into her desk drawer and snort it. It didn't add up. The deputies guided her down the steps, cameras snapping away like a flock of birds. Jessica didn't flinch. If anything, she looked composed, calm, serene even. A reporter shouted, "Miss Neal, care to comment on the allegations? Is it true you were in possession of illegal narcotics?" Jessica didn't respond. She kept walking, her gaze fixed straight ahead. Tom's throat tightened. He didn't want to believe it. He couldn't believe it. As she reached the police car waiting at the curb, Jessica paused. Her eyes scanned the crowd, and for the briefest moment, they landed on Tom. There was no shame in her expression, no anger, just a quiet understanding, an unspoken message. He could see it in her eyes. Don't believe it. Not yet. She folded herself like a pretzel into the backseat of the squad car, the door slamming shut with a finality that echoed through the crowd. The car pulled away, sirens off. Tom lingered on the steps like a dog who'd lost its owner. Around him, reporters scrambled to file their stories, each one eager to be the first to slice Jessica Neal's reputation to ribbons. But Tom couldn't move. His thoughts flashed back to his daughter, how Jessica had fought tooth and nail to bring Dennis Randall to justice. He thought of her quiet confidence, her sharp mind, the way she spoke with Lizzie, the comfort and conviction she embodied. And now this? No, something was off. Definitely off. "How long has it been since she was discharged?" Dr. James Lloyd asked.
3 days,
Marjorie said. "Has she had any seizure recurrence since she's been on levetiracetam?" Marjorie fumbled the pronunciation, so gave up.
"You mean the anti-seizure drug?"
"Yes, sorry."
"No, it's okay. And no, she hasn't had another one since."
"Good.
But I'm also worried. She seemed down lately."
"Recently or overall?"
"Both."
James Lloyd was Lizzie's psychiatrist. She'd begun seeing him after she had a mental break sophomore year. Yet after her abduction, he became a lifeline. A way to cope with the trauma she'd endured. Therefore, this answer didn't surprise him. Although he tried to keep patients at arm's length, he felt for this poor girl, more so than his other patients. While most people he saw were deserving of some pity, she had a never-ending well she could tap into.
"Do you get the impression that she knows more than what she's willing to share?" he asked, stroking his beard thoughtfully as they observed the girl sitting on the couch through the observation glass.
"Yes, I wish she'd open up and talk to me. I could help more if I knew what was bothering her."
"There's something we can try, if you want."
"What's that?"
"I could hypnotize her."
Marjorie's eyes sparked incredulously.
"Oh, don't tell me you're becoming a quack."
He held up a hand. "It can help lower anxiety levels and help her mood. I wouldn't suggest it if I..."
"I'm sorry," she interrupted. "But how can you think this is a good idea?"
Marjorie asked, her arms folded across her chest, as she leaned against the observation glass. Lloyd pushed his glasses up his nose.
I only recommend hypnotization as a way to help dig up past traumas. In your daughter's case, I believe she has some subconscious trauma that she has yet to work through. Sometimes it can be better to face our fears and work through it in a healthy way than carry the burden untreated. Marjorie bit her lower lip, looking unsure.
I don't know. She's already been through so much.
Lloyd held up a hand. Of course, by no means do I want to rush this. It's just a thought.
On the other hand, Marjorie said, do you think it will help?
Lloyd shrugged. Depends on the patient, but in your daughter's case, I believe it will, if nothing else, give us a roadmap to go down to explore future treatment. But you must remember, hypnotizing doesn't even work on a significant sect of the population. With that said, with Lizzie's blessing, I'd like to try a brief session, just to test the waters.
Marjorie nodded. You can ask her.
All right. He gave a sympathetic frown, walked back into the therapy room, and sat on the couch opposite Lizzie.
There's something I'd like to try, if you're comfortable with it.
Lizzie looked up, her eyes drained.
What is it?
I'd like to hypnotize you, he said, pulling out a silver pocket watch, chain and all. He sensed her retreating, scooting back in her seat.
No, I don't want to,
she said, shaking her head adamantly.
Sometimes we have things that bother us, things that we can't get out of our heads or move past. It's easier for us to get these thoughts and feelings out in the open so we can address them, work through them, and then move on feeling healthier than we did before. Does that sound like something you'd like?
After rounds of convincing, Lizzie nodded.
Yeah, I guess so.
Her eyes found the floor a nice resting spot. Okay, but if any time it becomes too much, we'll immediately put a stop to it, okay?
Okay.
She straightened, but looked unsure.
Perfect. Make yourself comfortable. Why don't you lie down? He asked.
She adjusted herself and placed her head down on the cushy armrest of the sofa. Lloyd rose and dimmed the lights, allowing only a meager amount of the late afternoon sun to trickle through the closed Venetian blinds. Would you like a pillow? He asked as he returned. She nodded. He fetched one for her and placed it under her head. When she seemed comfortable, he pulled out a stress ball and handed it to her. She gave him a curious look. This is what we call an anchor item. If at any time your memories or past experiences become too much for you, squeeze the ball. It'll help bring you back. If you want, I can place my hand over yours if it would make you feel more comfortable. She nodded. Okay, he said, gently resting his hand over hers. Let's begin. Nice and slow. He fished out the watch again and dangled it from his free hand. I want you to envision someplace relaxing. Maybe a warm beach, a cozy blanket near a fireplace, somewhere you're comfortable. The girl nodded. He gave her a few moments. Found your place? He asked. She nodded. Good. Now I want you to focus on the sound of my voice, Lloyd said softly. Let it guide you. You're safe here, Lizzie. Nothing can harm you. As you focus on my voice, I want you to also focus on your breathing. Take a slow, deep breath in, hold it for a moment, and let it out. Lizzie's chest rose and fell in a steady rhythm. Her grip on the stress ball loosened slightly, and her shoulders relaxed. Excellent. Now keep breathing like that, in and out. With each breath, you're going to feel a little more at ease, a little lighter, as if all the tension in your body is drifting away. You're floating in that safe place you imagined. Lloyd dangled the watch gently, the glint of the silver catching Lizzie's eyes as it swayed. Now, watch the hands. Just follow its motion with your eyes. Back and forth. With every swing, your eyelids are growing heavier. That's it. Heavier and heavier. Lizzie's blinks grew longer, her gaze fixed on the pendulum-like motion. You're doing so well, Lizzie. Now I'm going to count down from 10. With each number, you're going to feel yourself drifting further into relaxation, deeper into your safe space. By the time I reach 1, you'll feel completely at ease. Ready? Lizzie gave a faint nod. 10, breathing in and out. 9, letting all the tension leave your body. 8, feeling lighter and lighter. 7, let your mind drift. 6, eyelids growing heavier. 5, her eyes fluttered closed, and her breathing became deep and even. 4, drifting deeper now. 3, feeling calm, safe, and peaceful. 2, almost there. And 1, completely relaxed.
Lloyd watched her closely. Lizzie, can you still hear me? Her lips parted slightly, and a quiet, monotone yes slipped out.
Good. You're in your safe place. You're still in control, but you've let the worries and distractions fade away for now. I'd like to ask you some questions, but remember, you can stop at any time. Just squeeze the stress ball and we'll stop. Understand?
Yes.
All right, Lizzie. I want you to think back to the time you feel most afraid. You're safe now, but I'd like you to tell me about it, if you're ready. Where are you?
Home.
Home? What room in the house?
Front room.
Are you alone in the room?
Yes.
Are you alone in the house?
Yes. Mom and Dad are out.
Out?
Errands.
Is it dark outside?
Yes. Dark and foggy.
Does something happen to make you feel afraid?
The doorbell.
The doorbell rings?
Yes. I stand up.
Do you open the door?
Yes. But I don't want to. Keeps ringing.
Who's there?
A man.
Do you know him?
Yeah.
Who is he?
Dennis.
How do you know him?
Offered me a ride. Tried to get me in his car.
Did you?
Yes. I had no control.
No control?
Showed me photos of himself, naked. Something else in the back seat. A black lump. I don't.
Lloyd swallowed hard. Okay, Lizzie. Let's go back to the living room. He's standing there. Does he say anything to you?
Yes. Hi, Lizzie.
What do you say in return?
Oh my God, what are you doing here? Leave me alone. I try to shut the door. He stops it with his foot and pushes inside.
What does he say after that?
Nothing.
Nothing? Does he do something to you?
Yes.
What?
Has a sack. Throws it over my head. I scream.
Do you fight?
Yes. Doesn't matter.
What happens after that?
Don't know.
Okay. What's the next thing you remember?
There was a long silence before she spoke.
Train horn tossed inside the basement. Red light. It's cold.
What are you doing there?
Nothing. Just dragged inside.
Where are you in the basement?
Floor.
What does it feel like?
Cold, wet, hard.
Hard? Like cement?
Yes.
Are you still on the sack?
Yes.
Do you see Dennis again?
Yes.
Does he open the sack?
Yes. Won't let me out.
Does he say anything to you?
Yes. Time for you to meet the goddess.
Then what?
I see something move beside him. I get scared and close my eyes. It gets closer and crawls inside the sack with me. It touches my arm. I open my eyes to see what it is, then...
A blood-curdling scream ripped through the office as Lizzie bolted upright, her mouth contorted into an open-mouthed wail of terror. Her eyes squeezed shut, her hands drawn into talons. She howled like she was being torn to pieces. Dr. Lloyd jumped back, startled and frightened, as Marjorie rushed into the room, and chaos ensued. Underneath the flickering red light, the goddess threw herself off of Joey's thrashing form and splattered on the floor like a water balloon. Convulsions rocked both of them, the twitching, screaming boy on the bed and the mass of flesh on the floor. She was dying, and Dennis ran to her and cradled her in his arms. He needed the other one, the only one who'd ever escaped. She was pure, unblemished, and the goddess demanded her, needed her for this transfer. It was imperative. He put his hand on her and whispered, "Bring Lizzie to us." The goddess suddenly stiffened and began emanating a low, eerie hum. But instead of her usual power, the form slumped to the floor. She needed to get the disease out of her, and soon, the clock was ticking. Dennis had to save the greatest miracle in the history of mankind from perishing. Jessica typed away furiously on her computer from the comfort of her makeshift office. A small bar counter in a private safe house, converted for her by only the most trusted colleagues and officers. In reality, it was a private cabin in the sticks where no one, particularly the media, would find her. The stunt had worked. The firestorm had been raging for hours now. Article after article, page after page of merciless persecution. Her only disappointment is that the drugs and photo from Charlie's briefcase had yielded no physical evidence. If Dennis had touched either, it was with gloves. She needed to dig deeper, try to find something she'd missed the first go around, connect dots that remained separated. The white screen burned her eyes, a stark contrast to the darkness outside, but no amount of discomfort was going to dissuade her. She scrolled through Dennis Randall's criminal past, a registered sex offender, arrested for the grooming of an underage girl 15 years ago, was briefly a member of the Radical Pine Guard militia group, but that was all old news. Nothing of note. Her mouse flipped through page after page, report after report, all evidence she'd subpoenaed for her disastrous case 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks, was that all? Everything had transpired so quickly. Ever resilient, she gave everything a cursory inspection and found nothing new, no smoking gun. Discouraged, she reached for the flash drive on the counter and plugged it in. All digital evidence seized off his computer during the raid on his house. She'd already combed through this before, but maybe a fresh perspective could dig up something useful she'd missed first go around. She shifted on the wooden bar stool and squinted, as files popped on the screen. Suddenly feeling tired and lousy, she hopped off the stool and indulged in a long, warm shower. Returning refreshed and with red wine in hand, she retraced everything she'd pulled from Dennis Randall's digital life. She'd gone through his financial records and emails, but something still gnawed at her. She was missing something important. The computer was running Windows 95. Jessica opened Explorer and navigated through Dennis's file directories again. She'd already combed through most of the obvious places: My Documents, Desktop, and Miscellaneous. But as her eyes landed on a seemingly innocuous folder named Backup, something struck her. The folder size didn't make sense. 1 kilobyte? She thought. She'd seen the folder during her first look through. I glanced inside and found only a single empty text file. But as she hovered her mouse over the folder, the tooltip showed the total directory size was over 50 megabytes. For a man like Dennis, who seemed capable of operating mundane technology but nothing more, the discrepancy stuck out. What could take up that much space in a single folder? Or perhaps, more ominously, what was he hiding? Jessica right-clicked the folder and checked its properties. The hidden attribute wasn't enabled, at least not for the folder itself. So she went to View Settings and toggled Show Hidden Files. The directory refreshed and more appeared. She opened one. It was nonsense, random strings of characters. Another file showed the same thing. It looked like corrupted data, but Jessica's gut told her otherwise. She was still missing something. Frustrated, Jessica dug into her purse and pulled out a floppy disk with Norton Utilities scrawled in marker across the label. Norton Utilities was cutting edge for the time, offering a suite of tools for file recovery, disk management, and debugging. She'd anticipated trouble with these files and had come prepared. She inserted the floppy into the tower and waited, drumming her fingers on the keyboard as the program booted up. When it did, she selected Disk Editor, a tool that allowed her to view raw data on the hard drive. She navigated to the backup folder's directory and there, buried in clusters of unreadable hex code, found something interesting. Each file had an unusual extension, .dll or Dynamic Link Library. They were meant to look like system files, but Jessica knew enough to recognize that .dll files rarely resided in personal folders like this. More importantly, their file sizes, ranging from 1 to 5 megabytes, were suspiciously large. How had she missed this before? Impotence overcame her but then quickly faded. Maybe she was onto something. She renamed one of them, changed its extension from Dynamic Link Library to JPEG, then opened it. The image viewer loaded slowly as a grainy photograph appeared on screen. Dense forest, thick underbrush, taken in the fall due to the vast array of leaf color. A set of dingy railroad tracks ran through the foliage. The image was shot across the train tracks, leading to a clearing that backed up to more forest. An old dilapidated building rested in the corner of the clearing. It looked like a barn. Details were scarce. The second photo loaded faster, revealing Dennis Randall in the nude, performing a certain kind of act. Revolted, she scoffed and quickly hit the X button to back out. These were the kinds of photos he'd shown Lizzie in the school parking lot. Downing the rest of her wine glass, she tentatively clicked on photo 3, but not before refilling the glass to the brim. The third photo was strange, shot during the day, the sky a dull gray overcast, much like the first image. Maybe even shot in the same day? This image displayed the side of a white barn. This had to be the same one, with a man standing in front, not Dennis Randall, but another man, fully bearded, wearing glasses. A green sweater and a wide smile plastered on his face, so wide that it made her uneasy. Recognition sparked in her mind but couldn't light a fire. The embedded text read, "His first time, November 19th, 1996. She moved on. The fourth photo was of the same man, conceivably inside the white barn, standing in the darkened interior, hay bales and farming equipment surrounded him. The fifth photo made her want to vomit. The same man once more, swathed in red light, elbow deep in a boy's open chest, his hands caressing the heart. His sweater sleeves were rolled up and pinned to keep them from sliding down. His rubber medical gloves stained the color of her wine. Yet this was not the most disturbing part, though it was the same smile from the previous photo, a big, happy grin, his eyes calm and delighted as he stared down at the mauve, torn flesh. The embedded text read, "His first transfer, November 19th, 1996. Jessica stood, pacing on the smooth wooden floor. The cabin felt suffocating, remote, exposed. Faint arm hair stood on end as the overwhelming feeling of being watched ripped through her. Not knowing why, she ran across the room and shut all the window curtains. She still had dozens of photos on that computer, but was unaware if she could stomach them. Yet her duty as a DA pushed her to sit her back down and view the Yet her duty as a DA pushed her to sit back down and view with renewed assiduity. Her hands shook after she opened the sixth photo. Judge Hal Tyson squatted next to a large pit dug into the ground. The remnants of whatever filled the pit smoldered, as if a mass burning had just taken place. Jessica was pretty damn sure the smoking black embers were cremation remains, but the implication caused a tremor to pass through her stomach. Judge Tyson involved with Dennis Randall. The evidence was right there, utterly damning. The conflict of interest was beyond anything she'd ever seen as a prosecutor. She'd file an appeal on the ground of a mistrial, a motion that would surely be granted by an appellate court. Yet something else bothered her. Two things, actually. First, that man in the green sweater. She'd seen him before. But where? Racking her brain wasn't helping matters, so she set out to solve her other quandary first. She clicked back to the first photo and checked to see if there was any embedded text. Sure enough, a line flashed on screen. It read, "Outskirts of Chequamegon Forest." Wait. That rang a bell at the back of her mind. She closed out of the folder and began to re-examine the financial records. Then she realized what the alarm bell was. Two bills. One for a propane refill in the amount of $300, the other for a septic tank servicing. An address was listed on the latter. She squinted to read it and pumped a fist in the air triumphantly. "Yes! Yes! Yes!" she cried out like a man seeing his favorite sports team win in the closing seconds. The address matched the general area of the photo. She had a location. Beaming with self-pride, she took a long, hearty pull from the wine bottle, emptying it, and then dropped it on the counter in a shattering crash, her euphoric sense of accomplishment suddenly evaporating. She had just realized, in earth-spinning shock, where she'd seen the man in the green sweater before. There was a brief encounter after the trial, no words exchanged. Yet her mind had finally put the puzzle piece where it fit. Lizzie's therapist, Dr. James Lloyd. That's the end of this part. I hope you enjoyed it. Subscribe for more if you're on YouTube and hit that follow button if you're anywhere else like Spotify for the remainder of this series. If you'd like to support the channel, well, you can do so by liking this episode, subscribing, as I mentioned, and best of all, going to Patreon and supporting the channel there. If you don't want to, that's totally fine. But come on over to Discord if you feel like chatting with the rest of the group. It's pretty low-key. It won't take up too much of your time. Anyways, if you're a Patreon member, thank you for supporting my eating habits. I really appreciate it. And with all that said, take care now. Bye-bye then.